Before we start, we'll ask if there is a safety message. Thank you.
Good morning. The emergency exit is located behind me to my left and right. They're the quickest way out of the building. In the event of an emergency, we'll gather across the street at the building museum. The automatic external defibrillator is located behind the guard booth, as well as restrooms are just past the guard booth to the left. Today's safety contact will be fatigue and driving don't mix. Drivers experiencing fatigue is a common factor in accidents. Whether on the road for the holidays or just heading home after work, many of us are driving tired, which is an extremely dangerous thing to do. You never want to fall asleep at the wheel. Following these four tips for fighting fatigue will help prevent this from happening to you. Take a nap before you go. Try to take a nap before getting on the road before a long trip. Studies have shown that even if you sleep for less than an hour, your body receives crucial rest that you will need to stay awake. Healthy meals. Eat a healthy meal after your pre-trip nap. Grabbing fast food when hitting the road is convenient, but the fat, salt, and sugar contained in these products make you tired. Eat whole grain foods such as lean meats, fruits, and vegetables, the good stuff. These foods will help you stay awake on your trip. Take a break. Be sure that you take periodic breaks. For every 2 to 3 hours that you drive, stop for a 20-minute break. Stretch your legs and move around for a bit. It'll perk you up and allow you to keep alert. Stop at a rest stop if you're too tired to drive and don't believe you can make it to your destination, where you can take a short nap and be prepared to complete the journey when you awake. Follow these four tips to fight fatigue while driving, and you are helping to prevent accidents. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lemon. Before us is the agenda for today. Are there any questions? Hearing no questions, I'll accept the agenda. Have a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Thank you, Ms. Carmody.
So moved.
I'm not sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We need a member.
So
maybe Mr. Lobby was speaking.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Augustine. There's a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
And those opposed? Okay. We have a really full agenda today. I think we'll have hopefully a very good discussion over all of the many items that we have here. One of the first items on the agenda is the committee to receive the public outreach from the Title VI reports and consider staff's proposal regarding the Metro Rail hours of service, including supplemental bus, to mitigate the impacts. Next, we'll hear from Chief Pavlik, who will provide the security report covering January through September 2016, and that will highlight the Part 1 crime rate within the Metro system and provide an overview of the steps the Metro Transit Police are taking to reduce crime in the rail system, on buses, and in our parking lots. The final item on the agenda for our meeting today will be the information item on Metro's plan to improve reliability of rail car performance. The program is designed to reduce the delays caused by rail cars and ultimately improve service reliability for Metro's customers. I'll turn the floor over to Mrs. Bowersock at this time and Mr. Leader to begin the discussion on the hours of service. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Hudgens, board members. Today I'm going to provide an overview of public outreach and Title VI equity analysis conducted on proposals to change Metrorail's span of service and provide additional time for overnight preventive maintenance work. I'm going to present a recommendation for the board regarding changes to the Metrorail hours of operation and also Metrobus mitigation services. First, I'd like to quickly review the need for additional overnight hours. Our current overnight work windows are just too short, and crews are underutilized. With the system closed for just 4 hours, we really only have 1 hour to work, not enough time to conduct preventive maintenance. In fact, we only use that for emergency repairs. Present. During SafeTrack, by closing at midnight on the weekends, we've created longer overnight work spans that create 3 to 4 hour productive work windows. And in this chart, you can see that longer spans when trains aren't running are allowing significant work to be accomplished. So my colleague Andy Off presented on this last month, and I'll just quickly recap. When SafeTrack ends, Metro needs to move from emergency repairs to preventive maintenance practices that keep our system running safely and cut in half delays due to track failures such as insulator fires, cable fires, broken rail, and broken fasteners. Many maintenance tasks require a train-free environment with no power to the rails in order to be safely performed. And multiple reviews by oversight and peer agencies have all reached the same conclusion, that Metro needs more maintenance time. In October, in fact, we went out to the public to gather feedback on 4 proposals to change Metro's span of service, as well as to gather input on what travel alternatives customers would consider if the hours of operation were altered, and the 4 proposals are on this slide. The public comment period spanned from Saturday, October 1st through Tuesday, October 25th, and communications and outreach efforts included in-station outreach events, targeting stations and times to reach customers most impacted by proposed changes, stakeholder communications, targeted marketing and media, including newspaper advertisements, press releases, and social media posts, open house and public hearing held at Metro headquarters on October 20th, spanning more than 9 hours. The open house was attended by 53 customers who we asked to provide feedback on the setup and the information provided, and of those who did provide us the feedback, 90% said the location for the public hearing was good and the time of day was excellent or very good, and 76% said the information given was excellent or very good. And every person, in fact, said they were satisfied or very satisfied with their opportunity to provide feedback in that format. That day, 63 people gave testimony at the hearing, but I do want to remind the committee that that is less than 0.5% of all of the input received. Through all of the channels that you can see on this slide, an unprecedented number, nearly 16,000 public comments were received, surpassing other recent high-profile issues, including the station naming survey that had about 14,000 inputs for the phase one of the Silver Line. So we are doing a good job of engaging the public, but it's at their convenience. The survey was our primary feedback source. In fact, 95% of all comments came through the survey, and as you can see, most people chose the online. But we also did reach out to people with paper surveys to make sure that those who are not as engaged in the online community had an opportunity for feedback, and 30% of our survey comments were in fact collected via paper. I want to spend a minute reviewing the results of those surveys. First say this, that whether or not the preferences track with the percentages, it's important to note that public hearing and written comments first expressed opposition to any change in Metrorail's operating hours. Okay, so as I go through this and talk about preferences, it is as an alternative to the current hours. So on the next slide, you'll see the demographics of the survey participants. Generally, minority customers comprise about 45% of the riders on Metrorail, and low-income ridership is nearly 13%. We know these percentages vary by time of day, with late night and early off-peak hours reflecting a higher percentage of low-income and minority customers. Efforts were made during outreach to visit stations during off-peak hours, and as a result, the survey demographics included the following populations: 15% low-income, 41% greatly impacted or heavily impacted, and then 59% not at all or only modestly impacted. And I would just say to you, examples of that are, you know, we took paper surveys out to Anacostia at midnight and to Southern Avenue at 7 a.m. to make sure that we had an opportunity to include riders across the demographic span. And when people said that they weren't impacted, it could be because they choose to ride at different hours. And it's going to be important to note that late night hours, about 80% of the rail travel is discretionary, not work travel. So those folks choose to travel in different windows of time. To gauge the severity of the impact, customers were asked when they traveled, and customers who traveled during all 3 periods were considered greatly impacted were about 10%. Customers who traveled 2 to 3 of the periods were considered impacted 31%, modestly impacted 37%. And customers who traveled during none of the impacted periods are not impacted, and that's 22%. So when you talk about what the survey found, of the 4 options proposed, overwhelming preference, 45% of all respondents was for Proposal 3, which would adjust the Metrorail operating hours by closing the system at 11:30 p.m. on Monday through Thursday and 1 a.m. on Friday and Saturday nights, and operating from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. on Sunday. In fact, Proposal 3, that preference is about double the number for Proposal 1 and 2 combined. It doesn't vary when you go from all respondents to low-income and minority respondents. The preference for Proposal 3 was found across all demographics. And the survey findings in terms of travel alternatives, we could change the slide. 85% of our survey respondents said Metrobus would not be their primary alternative if the Metrorail hours were changed. And 33%, in fact, said they would not consider Metrobus at all. And on this slide, you see other alternatives that they would consider. And again, I say they would consider other hours on Metro Rail travel, as well as things like Uber, Lyft, carpooling, and walking. So a Title VI equity analysis was also conducted to determine the impact on low-income and minority populations for all four of the options that we presented to the public. And as you can see, all four do present a disproportionate burden on low-income populations. And Proposal 3 and 4 also have a disparate impact on minority populations. So what that means and what this says here is that the percentage difference from the system average in terms of minority and low-income customers impacted by each proposal. So in order not to create a DI or a DB, the difference has to be within 8%. And Proposal 3 comes in slightly higher than that, 11.1% for minorities and 15.5% for low-income riders. However, due to the overwhelming preference for Proposal 3 by rail riders, including minority and low-income riders, the equity analysis concluded that implementing the service change does not violate Title VI or environmental justice regulations because Metro has a substantial, legitimate justification for the proposed service change. Also, practically speaking, no less discriminatory alternative exists because minority and low-income populations overwhelmingly prefer Option 3, and Metro will provide supplemental bus service that will mitigate some of the rail service changes that have an adverse impact on minority and low-income riders, as recommended by staff. So that proposal is in this slide. Metrobus staff looked at the specific needs of customers impacted by Proposal 3 to develop a lifeline network of service and improve late evening Metrobus service coverage by building on the existing network and filling in missing links to suburban transit centers, as well as adding a number of trips on high ridership corridors in order to prevent crowding. Taken together, all of this leads us to a staff recommendation seeking the board's approval of the Title VI equity analysis, seeking the board's approval of Proposal 3 to adjust the Metrorail operating hours, reassessing by the end of fiscal year 2019 in conjunction with the Metro Safety Commission what those hours should be, and approving the Metrobus Lifeline Network Access Service Plan to mitigate impacts on our riders. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Bowersock. In the presentation, we have coming out of that actually two items that we must offer recommendation. And I'd ask if there is first a motion to put on the first one of the Title VI equity analysis, if that's the one that we also must move forward to. Is there a motion to place that one on the agenda? Thank you, Mr. Lowy. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second. Okay, and then let's ask for a discussion. I think there may be some questions so that we can walk through the methodology that you've gone. Are there questions on the I'll start with Mr. Bolger.
Thanks, Lynn, for this very important Title VI, which I think we're really on thin ice. I want to know how bulletproof this is going to be when we get sued on this issue. What's our general counsel's recommendation? Because I think we're way over the line here.
Thank you. One of the things that we've looked at, because you know it seems a bit out of the norm, is we did in fact talk with the FTA, and they did not raise any objections. Again, the concept behind Title VI is to provide the input for the minorities as well as for the low income. And given the study results, we believe that then becomes the least discriminatory activity, notwithstanding not meeting the board-approved standards for disparate impact and disproportionate board burden.
Madam Chairman, I've been on the other side of this issue with clients. Are they going to put this in writing?
We have not FTA? Yet asked for that.
No, I think we should. I really think we should, because I've been on the other side where they have hammered clients of mine, our company. Well, on the flip side,
we will make the request.
Let me go to any other questions, and then I'd like you to go back to the slide, because I think the discussion is there. Any other questions? No questions on it. Well, and going back to the slide, because I guess the clarity, when we look at the disparate impact and the disparate burden, we see that there is seen a burden or an impact, but we also see how the selection was made in terms of what choices would be made in terms of the change in services. Is that the lens that we're looking through?
So, Madam Chair, with the proposal number one, had the least ridership impact. So when we went out, our expectation was that that would be the preferred because it had the lowest number of riders impacted. So to learn that our customers preferred three was something of a surprise. But because the proposal is across all demographics in terms of level of support, that's why we feel a comfort level with the recommendation.
So we would not be providing any less of a service based on for that demographic.
That's right.
And that is what is that why we have an FTA that opines in that direction, or does it not at all acknowledge any disparity?
I'm sorry.
Did you want me to ask the question again?
Please.
Okay. In responding to Ms. Bowersock's presentation and her explanation, by there being a prevalence for the same level of service, that is, and on the impact or disparity, there would not be then an impact or disparity, and I don't know how to counter that question, but it does not show a disparate relationship in time and how we would be providing the service, because they did not prefer one or two, and they did prefer three, as did everybody else. If we were going to offer a service four, would there be a question?
Yes, because the level of support for proposal four from the customers was less.
So we would
and
be
the
offering service that they did not prefer
the,
would not find.
The FTA's feedback to us was that the customer feedback was persuasive.
I just wanted to put, okay.
So just to clarify this, is it the opinion of the general counsel and staff that equity analysis, the one level of analysis is subjected to a less degree of weight than the actual voiced preferences of the potential impact people? Is that how we're interpreting how we're moving forward with this?
That's a staff question.
And anyone who feels qualified to opine.
And maybe Jim Nguyen wants to speak to this, our civil rights director, who was with council and talking to the FTA about it. I will say that staff is persuaded by the customer's preference in this, right? And so there's no perfect solution. There's no solution that does not have the impact. And so we're persuaded that the customers want what they want and that that's the best path to follow, is to be responsive to the customers on this matter.
And to the extent that we know, do we believe, getting back to Mr. Boulder's question, that FTA adopts that rationale, that the voice of the impacted means more or can be weighted to a degree higher than in an analysis that you do?
One of the things that the FTA did tell us was that we should be documenting what it is. And again, the concept behind Title VI was to ensure that both minorities as well as, you know, lower income people are not disadvantaged. It seems a bit contrary, if you will, to the spirit of Title VI for WMATA to be going against what seems to be an overwhelming desire for a program by those people specifically being impacted. That's part of, you know, why we believe that it does meet the legal standards.
Mr. Dorsey, yes. The circular states clearly that when an agency does in fact come with a DI or DB, the input of the public should weigh equally in your decision making. Let me just cover what was said in that November 7th conference call. It was with our chief counsel, Patty Lee, one of her attorneys, Mark Reese, and myself. And although the FTA stopped short, Mr. Bolger, of approving it, and I didn't really not expect them to approve it over the phone there, they did tailor their response based on our option 3. What they informed us is, if we want to go forward with a DIDB finding, we must do 4 things. And these 4 things must be included in the Title VI analysis. Number 1, clearly state the business need for the request and why Metro needs 8 hours. Number 2, show and explain any and all mitigations. Number 3, strongly point out your public outreach, emphasizing the overwhelming desire of the public, which includes minority and low income. And the last one, summarize why Metro believes option 3 is the least discriminatory, although options 1 and 2 do not have DI and will provide the time required. And we have put those points in this particular analysis.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Ms. Dawkins.
I was going to hold this conversation till we actually talked about the actual proposal itself, because right now we're talking about the Title VI analysis, and then what would be that moves into the impact, obviously, on the proposal itself. But since we're having such an extensive conversation about it, I will express my great concern with, and I understand what the gentleman has said, but then there's also just the spirit of why you even do this Title VI analysis. And the reason for doing this analysis is to protect the minorities, to protect the low income. And it is very clear, it's very clear from this, that portions of the hours do not meet the standard, not even close. If you look, and for me it was important to ask, and I did receive from the staff, the breakdown by the hour. I didn't actually get all of it, because I didn't get it actually completely by the hours, but at least by the section. And if you look at it actually by this section, what you find is that within Proposal 3, it's actually that half hour from 11:30 to midnight, which actually falls outside of the window, the 8% window. That falls outside of the 8% window. And the other portion that falls outside of the 8% window by far are the changes on Sunday, where they are just not even close. They're simply not even close. The only hours that would actually fall within the spirit and within what Title VI suggests it should be are actually the late night hours. And they only do so when you apply the mitigation that they have actually put together, which would provide 20%, presumably 20%, to where it is still a little bit outside of where it is. And so for me, we haven't told, this is not telling the whole story. But I think it's important that we lay out the whole story. And that's the reason that for me, at least, those are important things that we must consider. And what Mr. Bolger has said, and he knows, because this is actually his business, is that we would be outside of, and we would be creating some jeopardy for ourselves if we move forward with these hours in the way that they are presented. Notwithstanding what these folks are saying, he's talking about what folks on the outside would do and how they would potentially sue us for what this is. And so for those reasons, I'm very uncomfortable with those specific areas versus the ones that we actually are within.
Thank you, Mr. Augustine. And your discomfort is one of the reasons I put this up here, because I don't think we should move to the next item without at least making certain that we can move when we get to that item. That's the key here, yes.
So this thank you, Ms. Hudgens. This could come up, I guess, either now or later, but I'll just bring it up now. It concerns the nature of the outreach, because really this equity analysis is, or our finding that this is the least discriminatory option is based in large part on our public outreach. And I just have a question about the robustness and rigor of that outreach and looking at the stations where we did that in-person outreach. And it appears, unless I missed something in the materials, that the outreaches of the blue and yellow and of course the entirety of the Silver Line was not included in in-person outreach. And while I doubt that that would have much of an impact on the equity analysis per se, I just wonder about the systematic nature of the outreach that we did and why those were excluded from specific outreach.
Thank you. The stations that were targeted are where we have the highest volume ridership of low-income and minority customers.
Can I just add on to that, Mr. Dorsey? I also note that there were any in Prince George's County that were on the list that had been met prior to this happening. How is that?
I will get the list for you.
I have the list. I read through the list, and in support of what Mr. Dorsey said, there was very little, actually, east of the river. There was very little. I didn't see any pop-ups or anything on there. I saw some that were, you know, supposed to be happening, but that had not yet or were not a part of the report. But I didn't see them in what would have been a part of this report.
I feel very confident in saying that those stations that have the highest ridership of low-income and minority folks either had people distributing paper surveys or had pop-ups or other forms of station outreach. That's the public outreach plan is based on those numbers. And those where the information, where the data is gathered.
So are you suggesting then that the people of Prince George's County, poor, minority or otherwise, were not important enough to go and talk to about this?
No, sir.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Any other questions on that item? Okay. Then I'd like to have a motion for approval or as the Title VI analysis is presented. I'm sorry, a vote on it. We already got the motion on the table. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed. And thank you for that. Mr. Bolger opposing. Okay, thank you. The second part here is, I think, the crux of what we are here to address, and it is the Proposal 3 for the Metro Span for service changes to July 1, and it goes from 5 a.m. Mondays through Thursday, and Friday 5 a.m. To 1 a.m. on Fridays, and then the Saturday services to 1 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday, the early hour of 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. Is there a motion for the item that includes the proposed service hour changes? Mr. Lobe has a motion to approve. Is there a second? I don't hear a second. I'm going to second it for discussion. I put it on the table for discussion. Let me start with Mr.
Oh, you can start if you want.
Okay. I put it on the table because I think we can start with the full discussion of what this item is for. I just lost my spot there. We recognize that any change in the service hours is going to be a constraining point for all of us, and recognize that that's important. And so when we look at, as this slide presents the hours for change, it recognizes that in some manner we will have some impact on our customers, and we can go across the board from where those customers will be impacted. I think the second and most important piece that I would see in us making this discussion is that we are making the change because we see quite clearly the metro system cannot continue to perform in the manner that it's been performing up to date. That is, it would be great if we could continue to have 3 a.m. services. I think everyone that uses our service recognizes that. And having moved to that over the years, we recognize that there has never been what we've had up to this year, the clarity of what preventive maintenance means to this system. And without having that, we have continued to harm the system. And the question here is, what will we do about it, and how will the board take accountability of that? It's clear that preventive maintenance has to be a critical element of what we do. And it's clear that we can't get to preventive maintenance unless we have the time and the tools to do so. Previous boards have addressed this issue. This was brought to the board as early as the 2000 timeframe, in which we said we would move from midnight to 1 a.m. And it was recommended, no, there was not enough preventive maintenance. When we came back and we made the decision to move to 1, years later, we moved to 3 a.m. The general manager at that time said, no, it was really not adequate. Board made a different decision. We did 3 a.m. And obviously, what may not have been apparent to the board, a no was not just the one thing that we needed to hear, but were the details of why not, how significant the impact. And most recently, as 2011, it was asked to move back, and we voted no. So I think we're at a time where we need to think about what role the board plays in being safe, as well as being reliable, and as well as driving the economy that the metro system plays. And I'm quite concerned that we are at the point where we need to decide and clearly flesh out what direction we want the system to move in. And that's my reason for supporting and getting this on the table. I think it's important. I'm sure we could go to back to the very beginning, but I think the 3 is a compromise proposal, and it seems to be a compromise proposal from the general manager. I think it's quite clear, based on SafeTrack, we've offered midnight hours that you need, and so that where we get there. So I recognize that the proposal that's here is hard. It means that there will be a lot of sacrifice for everybody. And the hope is that we'll move forward in a way that we can build a different system as we continue on that. And that's the challenge that we have right now. So in looking at that and trying to bring us all to the really correct point here, how do we get there? And Mr. Lauby, I'm going to give you, since you made the motion, the chance to.
Madam Chair, I couldn't agree more with your remarks. I think now is the time to make these adjustments. I represent the Department of Transportation, the Secretary, and the Secretary has made it clear that safety is an issue here at Washington Metro, and it's something that needs to be addressed and needs to be addressed as quickly as possible. And we've heard from management that they need more time in order to do not just the repairs, but the routine maintenance. This is something that's been ignored for years and years and years. And what we're left with now is because of decisions in the past where maintenance was deferred, essentially deferred. They just didn't do the maintenance at that time. Now we have an issue where we have SafeTrack. And I came in on the Orange Line today, so I've experienced SafeTrack 3 or 4 different surges, so I know what it's like. This is the price we're paying. Now, as we move forward, you know, we can talk about times, and these are tough decisions because they do affect the ridership, but from what I've seen, the ridership is saying that this is the least or the most acceptable way forward. But what I'm, my concern is that I think we need to take some action now so that the leadership of Washington Metro can start planning and start putting in place the revised maintenance plans that they need in the coming years, because this isn't something that you just do overnight. They have to do long-term planning. They have to make sure that they have resources and everything else in order to support this maintenance program, you know, not just this year, the year after, the year after, the year after, to keep this system in good repair. So the longer we put it off, the bigger our problem becomes. I think that we need to bite the bullet, go ahead and make a decision here and give the leadership of Washington Metro the tools they need to go ahead, do the planning, and make sure that they have a robust maintenance plan in place so that we can have a safe system from now into the future.
So safety and reliability are the highest priorities for WMATA. They're not the only priorities. We're a transit system that must efficiently provide productive transportation that meets the needs of our riders. Title VI of the Civil Rights Act protects people from discrimination based on race, color, and nationality. Based on the analysis, when you include the 20% mitigation associated with the Lifeline Plan, reducing the late night hours will meet the threshold set by Title VI. All of the other proposed hours within Option C will adversely impact minorities and low-income riders in violation of Title VI. I buy into and support the preventive maintenance approach. You all know that. I very much support that, and I support all of what you guys have talked about, and I want that to be the case. I want us to move forward with that. I'm certain that by its very nature, we'll see system improvements when we change from being reactive to being proactive. Mr. Off in his presentation emphasized the importance of contiguous hours to complete the preventive maintenance task. He also shared that the current weekday window from 12 to 5 provides sufficient time to complete certain tasks within the 2 hours of effective work time. By reducing the late night service on Friday and Saturday night to 1 a.m., we create 2 additional days that have sufficient time to complete preventive maintenance tasks. It takes 4 hours of service and creates 6 hours of preventive maintenance time, based on what we talked about before in the presentation that you made for us. It provides the greatest impact on the system with the least amount of hardship to all, including minorities and low income. With greater efficiencies and updated business practices, I'm confident that staff will be able to complete a successful preventive maintenance program that will provide the greater safety and reliability that we need. And so it is with that, I would actually like to offer an amendment to the proposal to change the hours of service to closing at 12 midnight, Monday to Thursday, and closing at 12 midnight, Monday to Thursday, as it is in here, and Sunday, still closing at 1 a.m., and then opening at 7 a.m. on Sunday, and 12 p.m. Closing, 12 a.m. closing, which is in keeping with what we had done before. And let me try to restate that so it's a little clearer for folks.
Yeah.
The current proposal closes Monday to Thursday at 11:30. I am proposing that we close at midnight, which is the way that it is now. I am also proposing that as a change to this, that we open on Sunday at 7 and close at midnight. What that effectively does is allows for the late night hours to be those that we change and addresses the disparate impacts.
You would open at what time on Sunday?
7 a.m., close at midnight. That covers, that actually takes us back to the pre-safe track hours for Sunday, but in essence, what it reduces then are the late night hours, the 4 late night hours, which would give us, in essence, the 2 additional days, the 6 hours of preventive maintenance time.
And you also went back to midnight on Thursday?
Yes, Monday to Thursday, midnight. Yeah.
So you went back to the, with the exception of Friday? And
correct.
So if I can just clarify with Mr. Augustine, so essentially it's clawing back 4.5 hours from the 8 hours that are embedded in any of the four proposals that we're considering today.
Well, it would be four. I mean, it still has 4 hours. It still would have the 4 hours because the 1 to 3 and the 1 to 3 are 4 hours, right?
That I think because you're saying Monday to Thursday, so
midnight.
Right, goes back to midnight, and so that gets us 2.5 hours.
All right, 2 hours. Sorry, not 4.5.
Only
right,
4 days.
Right.
It takes 2.
Right.
Yeah. And then you.
And then the 2 hours back from sundown.
4 hours.
Correct. And my thinking on that again is the contiguous hours were what was the most important. That's what they indicated to be the most important that we do. It protects us against the Title VI somewhat, actually, with it should. And it should give them the additional windows to be able to do this preventive maintenance. And I am hopeful that we can give them more time with that if they make some business practice changes.
Okay, Mr. Dorsey.
So,
well, you need a second first if we get.
If I can.
Oh, right.
You get the second. I'm sorry. Okay. The second is from whom?
Mr. Bolger.
Mr. Bolger. Okay. Let me start with the committee. Did you have?
Well, so we have motion on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked the modified agenda. The modification was second.
It was second. Yes.
So
it's,
what do we do now?
Well, I think the question is a discussion. And listen, this is where we're trying to go. I think there are going to be a series of these, but
right.
I think the process is really to get through the process thoroughly and talk about what's here. So, okay. Yes.
So my questions are to Mr. Wiedefeld, Mr. Leader. You know, first of all, you heard the modified proposal. I'd like to understand what that means to you. And a second question for Ms. Bowersox is if we do make this change, does this mean that we have to go back and do the complete analysis all over again, or what? How does that work? Because that proposal was not one of the things that we had public hearings on.
It is actually the within what was presented.
It's within what was presented, but as a standalone, it was not presented before. So what are the implications here?
We would need to reevaluate the equity analysis and represent that to the board.
Let's just so I think I'm totally clear. If I just look at proposal one, so the Monday to Thursday would be as is in proposal one, 5 a.m. to midnight?
Yes, sir.
And on Friday, it would be 5 a.m. to midnight or 5 a.m. to 1?
To 1.
To 1. And on Saturday, it would be 7 a.m. to 1.
Mm-hmm.
And on Sunday, it would be 7 a.m. to midnight.
Yes.
So basically, you know, what we have been proposing is 8 hours to do the preventive maintenance that, again, we feel that has not been done for decades here. This would basically just totally eliminate that ability, I think, in my estimation.
Right. I'm sorry, say that again? I just didn't hear
it. It would eliminate that ability to basically to institute a preventive maintenance program. We'd be back to, in effect, where we are.
How would you be back where you are if you get 2 additional days that you said that you did not have before?
I think what the issue is, I think what you're forgetting, it's not the total hours. It's the total hours based on the number of assets and what we need to accomplish, whether it's over a 1 year, 2 year period. So if you shrink the hours each week, that means we can't get as many assets done. So for instance, if we wanted to surface our ballasted track in 1 year, if we lose 4 hours, we are not going to be able to get what we wanted to get done in 1 year. That is now deferred again. So it's just not continuous hours. It's having the additional hours we needed. That's how Andy based his program on. The five programs were based on the total hours we needed based on the number of assets that were included in that program.
Yeah, that it was not presented that way, sir. That's not the way that it was presented to the committee. I mean, it just was not.
Well, I remember Andy's presentation when he talked about the number of cables that needed to be measured. So the number of hours that he came up with for that program was based on the number of cables that would have to be measured, okay, in a year. So that's why we came up with the number of hours. So there was, if maybe the point didn't get across, I apologize, but it was in the presentation.
So, well, thank you. If all the members of the committee have spoken, there's a few thoughts speaking to the motion and just the overall approach. And I think it's probably fair to say that none of us would want to be in a position of making any of these considerations to diminish service. So I just want to put that out there. And the essential key finding of the agency and this board was that the time was needed. Once we came to a degree of comfort on that, and looking at these specific proposals, the way at least I approached it, you know, there are things to not like about each of them, and even the one that was the one that's being proposed today, I think is not as easy to understand. It's got three different opening times. It's got three different closing times. It's probably not what we would best design. The analysis that we've done has weight, but, you know, the weight of the public. And this is why I asked the question earlier about the outreach, making sure it was as robust and as rigorous as possible, is really key here. Any equity analysis, the primary factor is the agency of the people who are affected, not just what you think is good for them, but what they say is good for them. And even though I would have much preferred that we would have had all stations or a representative sample across all of the lines, sampled with that in-person outreach, the numbers are pretty overwhelming, much beyond any, sample errors that say that the public really prefers option three above all else. And, you know, given that I've gotten to the point where I am comfortable that the time is needed, diminishing that time by 4 hours per week is going to have substantial impacts on the maintenance program. I get what you're saying, Mr. Augustine. We could certainly do a lot better with your amendment than where we are now, but it's a significant erosion from the PM plan that was presented to us. There's no way that you can take 4 hours out of every week and still accomplish the same program. So, you know, for me, if I accept that that's the program that we have to do one of these four. And if we have to do one of these four, while I don't love any of them, the public clearly does. And, I feel comfortable referring to that.
Mr. Dorsey, and thank you. I appreciate exactly what you're saying. When we started this program, when we started this discussion, rather, I was very clear, and I asked very clearly to staff and everyone around the table, and I shared with the public that I talked to, and it was that these were the outer limits of what could or could not be done, okay? And that we would have to then make an assessment. We would have to look at this, and anything that we would do, those would be the outer limits, and that we would be able to do things that would be coming within that. I took the survey, okay, as well. And I took the survey, and I chose option three, but only because it was the only possible option. It was the option that made the most sense, but I was not able within that to be able to provide any kind of nuance or anything else like that that would say, hey, listen, wait a minute. I don't think that the system should close at midnight. I don't think that that's reasonable. And clearly, not having Sunday service is just not reasonable. The others just weren't reasonable, okay? So option three is reasonable, but it does not suggest or doesn't mean that as a whole that was the only option, the only thing that truly made sense to the people. It was the one that I agree provides structure, overall structure that says this is the overall structure of what makes the most sense. But there's more to that. There's more to it. We have more responsibility than that. We have to also then look at what the data says. We also have to ask the questions like you asked the question. Well, who did you get this response from as well? I mean, if you did not get it from these folks on this side, I mean, I have to take that into consideration. And so for me, that's where you're hearing me come from. And that's not I want them to have the 8 hours. I do. I really do. But I've looked at what they put forth, with the information that's come forth, and what they shared with us. And this is bringing it, where I think, at least, is a place that makes more, that is more balanced, okay? And that I'm hopeful that they will do some things like working on some of the shoulders that we talked about that's been shared before, perhaps, to do better. And I know that they will, by the way. I hear what they're saying, but I know that they will. And there's just one more point. We are a world-class city. We want to be, we are, we need to be a world-class city. I asked staff, I said, who else closes before midnight? Before midnight. Who closes at 11:30, right? And there isn't anybody. Now, we have to do catch-up here. There's no question. We have to change our business practice, which they're going to do, and they're talking about, and they're going to do. They're going to change from being reactive to being proactive and preventive. They're going to have more time to do that. I'm not suggesting they don't. 40% more time, effective time, is what this is what this does. 40% more effective time. So they're going to get that, and they're going to do the job. I know that they will. I've got great confidence that they will do that, and I think that they can do that within these constraints.
I hear you, Mr. Augustine. I think ultimately where I've arrived at, where I hope others have as well, if you accept that we need to get to 8 in order to avoid being a system, you talk about a world-class system, which I agree we strive to be. World-class systems don't go about accomplishing their maintenance with doing safe track type surges every couple of years. If we want to get to that point, and we think 8 is the number that gets us there, then I just think we have to accept one of the proposals that gets us to 8, even though I completely appreciate where you're coming from in trying to make sure we reduce the impact to our customers as much as we possibly can.
I mean, just to on that note, we will have the smallest number of hours of any of these large heavy rail systems that are out there. Now, I know we've got a lot of catching up to do, but just folks do need to be aware that would be what we would be doing. I mean, you really would be restricting it beyond any other of the systems.
Mr. Goldman, and then Mr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to take a minute to align myself with the views of the Chair, Mr. Lauby, and Mr. Dorsey in favor of either Proposal 1 or Proposal 3 as they're presented. I mean, it's ironic that we're here 1 year after we hired Paul Wiedefeld as the general manager. He hired him to make this system safe, and we hired him to make this system operationally reliable. And he's come to us with his professional judgment that he needs 8 hours to do this. And I'm not going to undercut him, and I'm not going to second guess him, because that's his professional judgment, and that's why he's here. So I would fully support either Proposal 1 or Proposal 3, and were this proposal amendment adopted by your committee today, I would either support at board level an amendment or present one that would restore either Proposal 1 or Proposal 3 as presented by staff. I must say that, so I just close by saying, I am a little surprised that the public decision was in favor of Proposal 3. I frankly would have thought that Proposal 1 would have been the better option, but I think we have to be guided here by what the public seems to want, and the public, even in elections, sometimes makes inappropriate determinations, and I think we have to be guided by what the public thinks is in their best interest.
Press no quote, Mr. Goldman, on that one.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I was impressed earlier by Chairman Hudgens' recounting of the history of past boards and how they responded to requests for more time for maintenance, and apparently past boards kept shaving away at the proposals and second-guessing the management. I am firmly with Mr. Goldman's view that we have a crisis. I think we accept that we have a crisis. It doesn't seem the time to once again second-guess management and shave away the hours that they have said they need. I'm not an expert in this area. I know these are unpleasant choices, but I take very seriously the effort that Mr. Wienfeld and his staff have put into making these determinations and doing these studies. None of this is pleasant, but governance is doing the least pleasant thing that helps the most people. So the least unpleasant thing, I'm sorry, that helps the most people. So I would support three. I think it's the best we can do, and I think we need the time to do the maintenance. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schmidberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, want to add my name to Mr. Goldman and Ms. Carmody's words. Is option three, I think, is the best option. We've heard from the professionals that we've hired to run this organization and trust that the information that they put forward is accurate and what they need to get done. We are at a point where we have very limited options, and as Carol said, governing sometimes, you know, it requires very tough decisions, and so I would support that proposal and give the staff the hours they need to get the work done, and possibly then we come back later and, you know, revise it after, you know, they've been able to complete that work.
Okay. Any other discussion? I call for a vote on the motion. All those in favor of that motion?
Madam Chairman, we had two motions, one on top of the other.
This is only the amendment. Right, the amendment to change the hours. I guess I should have noted that for you. Okay, all those in favor of them? Okay, one vote. All those in opposed? Opposed. Yeah. Do we have? Yeah. Well, we're committee voting, unfortunately.
Yes, yeah, two.
Okay, two.
I'm serving as
okay.
Parliamentary.
Well, I didn't see your other two. I saw your hand go up. That's why I went to make you see. Okay, so it is a 2-2. And that's a tie, it fails on a tie. Thank you. I do need my help there. Okay. I'm walking through these because all three of these pieces of this motion are important. Okay, so we're back to the original hours as proposed in the recommendations. And the remainder in this motion talks about the fiscal year review in terms of looking at this work. And that is in the original motion. And I am going to ask the question regarding consideration in order to look at the overall hours as far as the reporting is concerned. Ms. Barasak, the reason I raise this is that in our resolution we talk about a report coming to the board, and the question that I would ask is if we could provide the clarity of the data that the analysis is being done on, would that be a greater sense of opportunity to help the board make its reflections to the staff on the quality of the work and how we're moving? I think it's important that the resolution notes that we would come back quarterly to get reports from staff on the progress at FY19. And the question that has been asked of this is, what might we use? And I think in that motion it needs to be clear. Would there be metrics that we would be able to get from staff so that we can monthly, quarterly, start looking at what progress we're making? And is 2019 the time frame that's best for us to do that? Okay. All right. Mr. Chief.
Good. It looked like two points you were trying to make there, benchmarks, metrics, and then how many fiscal years are we talking about?
Right.
Did I get that right?
Sure.
Okay, on the first point, I'm all for it, and I'd like to know what the benchmarks are going to look like, what the metrics are going to look like, what the logistical challenges or opportunities about all these hours that you all have told us you need, and you know how efficient that logistical effort and pre-positioning or whatever the hell, heck, you know, you all have to do to get the, make the maximum out of the time given versus crews standing around waiting for the power to get shut off, okay? So, I mean, that seems, in talking to people, that seems to be a big loss of time. So I'm with you on that one. On the second question, can we ask it differently, Madam Chairman, about whether we're talking about 1 year or 2 years? Is that okay?
Yes, it says at the end of the fiscal year 19.
Would you entertain an amendment to that to make a 1 year rather than twos?
Yes.
Okay, so I make a motion.
If you make the motion, I would be willing to.
Okay, I make the motion in fiscal year. And the between the third and the fourth clauses to read that it would end in fiscal year 2018 or July 1, 2017 to June 30th, 2018.
You're doing different things, though, right now.
Well, I think we talked about the metrics, but now we're talking about the time.
The time assessment. And that's,
no,
and that's
not that amendment.
It reassessed the program at the end of fiscal year 2019. And the question is, can we reassess it at the end of 2018?
Correct.
And is that what you're supporting?
That's the modification.
Any discussion in making that change?
I've got just a couple of questions. When you talk about reassess, does that mean that in 2018 this modified schedule expires, or is it still in place? What does reassessment mean?
I think reassessment means that when we get to the end of it, we would reaffirm that we continue to move forward, or we would not.
Madam Chairman, don't we have that capability at any time? I mean, next week, if we wanted to reassess, we could do it then too?
That is correct.
I think that is partly so.
Madam Chair, Bob, you're right, and Christian, you're right, but if we don't memorialize it, no one will remember, believe me, that it has a tripwire, that we have to do something in a year. We'll get caught up in doing 18 other things and forget.
Well, I understand that. I think you kind of know where I stand. I think that we need to have the 8 hours of additional time for maintenance, but one thing I just want people to realize is that there's a predictability issue here also. We're going to ask the Washington Metro leadership here to put together a long-term plan to maintain this system as a world-class system, and if we change horses every year or change programs every year, I'm not sure how that's going to affect what you can do as far as your long-term planning. I think that's just something we need to consider. Secondly, I'm not a businessman, but I would assume that there needs to be some predictability even for the District of Columbia, people that are investing in businesses and other things, to understand where Washington Metro is going to be, when it's going to be open, when it's not. If I'm establishing a new business, a bar or something like that, I'm probably going to want to know consistently for my business plan, you know, when Metro is going to be available and when it's not. So I think we do have to have a level of predictability, but you know, I'm all about getting this time to do the safety maintenance.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Well, why don't we just make it wide open then? You know, 10 years, you know, whatever. Bob. What's the magic? You know, well, 1 year seems reasonable.
I'm not saying it doesn't seem reasonable. I'm just saying that we need also consider whether predictability is an issue or not, for Washington Metro's long-term maintenance plans. If it's just going to be temporary, they're probably going to have a different plan than if it's going to be something that's going to go 2 years, 3 years, I don't know. And the same for people that are making investments along, you know, business investments along the right-of-way.
I'm trying to accommodate discussion, so
Madam Chairman. Clarify what Tom is saying. The district's position is as follows, that these hours would be in effect for 1 year, on June 30th of 2018, it would expire, and we would revert back to the 3 o'clock in the morning. That gives the board then the opportunity in June of 2018 to make a decision that it wants to then extend these for another year. If the board does not make that decision, it would automatically revert back to 3 o'clock in the morning. That's the district's position.
Okay. I wanted to allow you the opportunity to participate in it. I will tell you that my motion is not to revert it explicitly. Right. It really is to say the assessment could be done in 19 and we would see the data and we would continue. And that would allow us to hopefully get that sense of stability that we are looking for, not only through the general manager's actions, but through the board's actions, actually, in supporting what's there, versus saying turning back to the old hours would really, I think, change the planning that's been done there. That's the part that's hard there.
So listening to the district's proposal as articulated by the chairman, which is to put colloquially, it's a sunset of this, for a hard sunset. I just want to ask about the implications of that. Would that mean that at the end of fiscal year 18, in the event that the board did want to continue, that we would then have to do, under law, another equity analysis and another set of public outreach to continue the same program?
Yes, we believe so. I mean, at minimum, an equity analysis, and depending on what the board wants to consider, perhaps more public outreach.
Yeah, I mean, along those lines, then, you know, it seems to me, and I'm going to try to be a compromiser here. If a sunset is something that is what it takes to get this board to do what it needs to do, why not consider a sunset of 2 years? Where it seems to me it's fairly reasonable after a two-year period of time in making this shift, we would actually want to go back to the public again and get some opinions and outreach. And, of course, as this is structured, at any time, the GM and the board can decide, you know what, we're good. We can expand service, but we can't restrict it. So in the effort of saving staff time and money, in the effort of being an efficient organization that's able to implement a program, would the district consider a two-year sunset with robust metrics for reporting beginning a year earlier, not in 18, but in 17, so that we can look at this on a quarterly basis to see where we are?
Mr. Dorsey, the answer to that question is no. The executive branch at in the district, the mayor, is very firm in only supporting 1 year. The mayor, the council, chairman of the council, do not like this idea at all. We want to stay at 3 o'clock in the morning. I can go into all the reasons, you don't need to hear them, but our nightlife, our employees, et cetera, et cetera. We're willing to compromise and go to 1 o'clock, but only for a year, and only if it does sunset, so that gives the district the position, if we believe that the work has either been done or can be done with lesser hours, the opportunity to have this changed. If we do, what Ms. Hudgens is suggesting, we lose the opportunity to have a jurisdictional veto. And certainly if we do what you're suggesting, it's 2 years. So I'm representing not myself here, I'm representing the district, the mayor, chairman, council, who are very firm in this position that we want this to sunset. And then if the board at that time chooses to want to move ahead with another year, then we'll do what the staff recommends. I heard you say, though, that it doesn't sound like we have to go back out and do all the exercise we just did, that we can do an internal evaluation, which I assume is what we could do, and then extend it.
That's not what I heard them say. I actually heard them say we would have to do exactly what we just did.
I don't think she said that. Go ahead. What did you say?
So our understanding, and Mr. Wynn will correct me if I say anything that he thinks that the FTA would not concur with, is that we would have to, at a minimum, bring back to the board an equity analysis to see what the change would trigger, if anything. But depending on what the board wants to consider, if it wants to change the hours in some alternative way, if it's not just reverting back to what we had pre-SafeTrack, if there's some other consideration, then we would have to go back out.
No, but what the consideration is Paul's plan, option three, is in existence for a year. It's now June 30th of 2018. We want to continue Paul's plan for another year. See, that's not what you're addressing. You're saying if they change it or do this, that, and the other thing. We want to continue Paul's plan exactly as it is for another year. You're saying we have to go out and do all this stuff again?
No, we believe no, right. At that point, unless there were a major shift in ridership,
correct,
where we would have to reassess the inputs, if there weren't a major shift in ridership, that we would still be good with the data that we have.
But that would only be if that action were taken prior to July 1st. With a sunset, once that date happens and it reverts back to 3 a.m., if the board wanted to do something else, okay.
Any others? Having that discussion, I think the motion that we were putting on the table was to put the 2018 review on, and that. Not for sunset.
Yeah, we have to do them one at a time.
Yes.
She has a different one. We will obviously do this one as well.
This is in order to come back and provide the analysis as soon as at an earlier date that gives the board that opportunity to monitor it as thoroughly as possible. And it continues it till 19, and unless there was some decision by staff. That's what's on the table right now. Okay?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
How does that fit into the resolution?
We would have to amend the resolution to simply show, I think what I mentioned was the metrics that are not part of the resolution, and the date would then say 18.
Okay, so if I just can articulate what you're saying, what you're suggesting is that we amend the resolution to incorporate metrics, measurements in 18 quarterly.
Right.
In 19?
Yes. The statement in the resolution says, I'm sorry. Statement in the resolution says, on a quarterly basis, beginning in FY18, progress on the repairs. I'm going to change my book. Yes, the progress on it and providing each week. Did I have a different?
So you want to add specific metrics to this resolution?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Should we have a discussion about what those are?
Well, first we're getting we got to get the amendment on the floor first.
And that's it.
And that's the amendment, right?
Yes, that is the amendment.
And you're making that?
I'll
second that, all right?
Okay.
Okay. And then we can have the discussion on that. Yeah.
Okay. Any question? Any discussion?
I mean, I'll just offer an idea, and I think, sure, others would have more, but it would seem like you would want to have some reporting on what the PM that is being performed versus what the plan's projections were. So an analysis of where we are in actual versus projected, and then to the extent that it's possible, and I realize this may be the harder lift, what we were able to do pre-SafeTrack. Given that we didn't really have a PM plan before that, it may be a difficult data lift, but to the extent that we can, we'd like to see a pre-SafeTrack. We'd like to see what you're actually doing and then what you projected that you could do so we could have a clear sense of what the levels of improvement are and what the areas of continued need for improvement are.
No, I would agree with Mr. Dorsey. I had also articulated what I thought would be in the meat of what we'd get feedback loop earlier. So I don't want to repeat myself, but I'm worried about the logistics.
I think the purpose of raising this part and recognizing you must use metrics is that there is a sunlight in terms of what the board's responsibility would be and what we are expecting from the team here. And I think by doing that, that gives us a greater opportunity to say we're really making a concerted effort to see that we're making progress, and we will be able to make further decisions based upon what we see.
Okay. I think in the resolution you can put in that the metrics will be provided. But basically what we would do is what we laid out for you is the preventive maintenance program. So we will show you what the measuring we're doing, what the tamping's doing, the productivity per hour. In effect, if we said we need 8 hours, how much of that is out on the track doing the work? And so that's what we'll do. And I think your suggestion is, and where were we? I think is a good way to do that, because we can say this is what we've added to get to the preventive maintenance. So we will be glad to do that.
All right. Yes. Yes.
Just I think that's good, but I think some reliability and safety information needs to be part of those metrics to show how we are getting into an area of better repair, you know, fewer delays, everything else. And I think that's very appropriate. The management has asked for this consideration, this extra time. And by the board, you know, providing them the time to do this, really the onus to deliver is basically at the end of the table here. And those metrics should be an important measurements, and they shouldn't be just counts. I think the board would expect to see significant improvement in all those numbers, and I think that would give us the information we need to make a reassessment of whether this is the right way to go or not.
And thank you. I think the importance of that is that gives us that opportunity to recognize when we're looking at this period of time, we have some measurement that we can say in that period of time it makes sense for us, rather than making a decision earlier than that period of time. That's the rationale. Okay. I think we are through that section, and that's the question. All those in favor? Aye. Okay. That's an opposed? No one's opposed on that. And the last part that we have is to approve the Metro Bus Lifeline Network Access Service.
No, we don't. No.
You have to meet them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wrapped that all up. I'm sorry. It has gone too long. Okay. So now we'll have a motion on all of the changes that have been made with the late night.
Madam Chair, before we do that, I too feel that there, and it comports a bit with Mr. Dorsey, that there should be an end to this. We should come back to this. And so I would ask to amend the resolution by inserting an additional between paragraphs 4 and 5 and have it read that resolved that the adjusted Metrorail operating hours and Lifeline Network Access Service Plan shall end on June 30th, 2019, after which the Metro shall will revert back on the operating hours, which in essence does what Mr. Dorsey suggested. It is the 2 years and not the one, but I would put forth that amendment.
I'm sorry. I'm going to ask you your wording again. Just repeat that first.
That didn't pass. It's not going anywhere.
You never voted on one.
It's not. Yeah. If you want to, we can go.
I had a motion, Madam Chair.
Half an hour ago that we never discussed. The chairman helped discuss it a little bit, and Kristen helped discuss it a little bit. We never voted on it, though.
The last part of this is the part that you had. Okay. So you want to add that as an amendment to the entire motion?
No, I thought we were kind of going in order, linear order. My motion was the one-year tripwire versus 2 years.
I'm sorry.
The one-year sort of encapsulates what we were talking about versus 2 years.
So, Mr. Bowler, what you're proposing, and please help me understand here, are you proposing 1 year and then a reassessment, or 1 year and go back to the old schedule? What exactly are you proposing?
Well, as the chairman pointed out, it'd be 1 year and we go back to the old schedule. Now, I think we can discuss that, and maybe there's a compromise somewhere in between all that.
So 1 year and then go back to the 3 a.m. closing, right?
I thought we had a second on it, and maybe we didn't vote on the second. Did we get a second? Because you raised the 19th, the 18th, did you?
Yes.
Yes.
So Madam Chair, I apologize, and I will tell you what I did. I should not have done that. I jumped past because I apologize because I heard from hearing what I heard that there wasn't support for the single year. Now, I was wrong for doing that, and I apologize. So we should, as Mr. Bolger suggested.
You can't vote now because you jumped ahead.
Is that how it works?
All right, I'm going to step in as the parliamentarian. Yeah. You're out of order there, yeah. Mr. Bolger. Yeah.
So Mr. Bolger did make the switch. Mr. Bolger did make the switch to the 1 year, right?
Correct.
Okay. And we should, I apologize, we should have the discussion about that.
Well, you need a
so
second.
So he made that, and okay, I will second it to get to this.
The second for that motion, then, is coming from whom? On the
I seconded it to get to the discussion.
Let's go back to that.
Okay.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion to sunset it on 2018, is that the
yes.
essence of your motion?
Right.
Okay.
Aye.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
And I think we're where we were before. There was an oppose.
Yeah, to oppose, not fail.
Okay. Now it failed. Thank you. That's where we've been.
I got it.
Okay. All right. Now,
so,
this is the this
Madam
is
Chair?
The full motion.
Actually,
no.
Madam Chair,
he's going to make
this
amendment.
Is where, again, I'm going to come back again. And like I said, I apologize because I jumped it. The 1 year did not pass, and I heard that loud and clear. So what I am now, though, proposing, I am now putting forward a two-year, okay, the two-year, the 1 year did not, but the two-year, which would then see, with the, again, between paragraphs 4 and 5, that the Metro Operating Hours and Lifeline Network Access Service Plan shall end on June 30th, 2019, instead of the 2018. So it's the 2 years that Mr. Dorsey has suggested. The 1 year did not pass. I am putting forth the 2 years. And again, that is, again, just to speak on it, if it's okay, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. Well, we need to get a second if we can.
Okay.
On two.
I want staff will help me with the language, but you're simply moving the 2 years as
it's a new operative clause that creates a sunset after two years.
Okay. Instead of one.
The okay.
The
you're
District of Columbia offered one. It did not pass. I am saying 2 years.
And, yes, discussion, please.
So this would be a sunset? This would
yes,
be a sunset?
The same,
yeah.
It's only
but
a
2 years instead of one.
Second by Mr.
So at the end of 2 years, it would sunset again, go back to 3 a.m.
Without action by the board. I mean, the board can, in keeping with what Council Chair Evans, in keeping with the discussion that was had, right, it simply gives them an additional year to do this. But we still would then, what applied at 1 year, instead of having to do that in 4 months, it would be in 16 months. And I understand the position of the district, but
just again in trying to come up with something that's more of a middle ground, at least then they have 2 years, and that's all that I'm suggesting. And I apologize for jumping, but it failed. And so that's the reason I went and suggested at least we consider it for two.
Well, you know, from my position, I'm really not for an automatic sunsetting where we go back to the 3 a.m. closings. I don't think you can predict whether that's even a good idea from this point, but I would be open to a reassessment either after 1 year or 2 year to go back and revisit. You know, anything that sunsets, if we're going to say 2 years from now, we can go back to 3 a.m. automatically, you know, I don't think that's realistic. I think we need to see the metrics that are going to be provided by management, and we're going to need to make an assessment of where we are and where we need to go to get this back to a world-class system.
Bob, I would agree on the reassessment issue, but if we don't have a hard stop here, okay, it's just never going to happen, okay? So the pressure to go back to 3 a.m. to me, okay, is a lot, a big kick in the you-know-what to get it done, okay? It's leverage.
So, you know, I agree with Mr. Lobby that a hard sunset is not how I would optimally design to do this, but I think we're also living in the world where we've got some very strongly held opinions by some of the partners to this, and we need to figure out what's going to make them at least comfortable that there's not going to be a setting in of a status quo that kind of leads to this being our normal in perpetuity. And, you know, if you look at the implications of Mr. Augustine's amendment, at any point during a 2-year period, which to me is much more realistic than a 1-year period, the board can undertake the process to say, you know what, we think that we need to continue this further, and it can take that affirmative action to do so. But if in the event the board is not able to come to that decision or there is not that agreement, it seems to me to be reasonable, given the nature of all of this, that we would undergo then a process of assessing the impacts and getting feedback from our public to determine our path moving forward. So this is not ideal, but given the political and practical realities that we exist in, if people could coalesce around this, I think we could definitely defend it as giving management the ability to perform their program, and then also sending the very clear signal to our public that we will check back in with them in a reasonable time period about what our future is.
Can I just
let me let Mr. Goldman say,
I just wanted to make a statement to the effect that I support Mr. Augustine's suggestion, not only because he's from Maryland, but because that's, I think, a good and useful compromise to make. And I think we should, as a regional body representing 3 jurisdictions, make efforts every once in a while to listen to what our colleagues say, this time in the district, and try to find some kind of path forward that lets us all move forward in a way without having to see a threat of a jurisdictional veto be threatened or being exercised. Since we as a board look at fares every 2 years and look at our tariffs every 2 years, I don't see why we shouldn't look at our hours of service every 2 years. And so at the end of this 2-year period, we'll look at the hours of service and we'll decide whether we should continue what we're going to adopt as proposal 1 or 3 for another 2 years, or whether we want to revert back to what's in effect prior to June, or whether we want to do something different, some third option at that point. And so in that spirit of both a sense that we should reach out our colleagues in other jurisdictions to compromise, and in the sense that we should look at hours of service just like we look at fares every 2 years, we should move forward with Mr. Augustine's motion.
Let me have Ms. Evans weigh in, and then I will weigh in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't going to speak till Mr. Goldman just brought up the idea of compromise. The district did compromise. The district doesn't want to do any of this. The mayor has issued a press release that is very firm. She wants to stay at 3 o'clock. the council passed a unanimous resolution saying they want to stay at 3 o'clock. I was able to prevail on my colleagues at the mayor and the council that we had to make some compromise. So we agreed to compromise. We agreed to 1 o'clock, and we agreed to 11:30. I happen to agree with Mr. Augenstein that I would rather close at midnight and not 11:30. I have gotten calls from the unions, from the restaurants, from everyone I represent. And again, I will point out I have 12 metro stops in my ward. I have 50% of the liquor licenses in the city and 70% of the hotel rooms in my ward. And they're all extremely upset that the district is willing to compromise on this issue. So we have compromised. We are not willing to go beyond a year. So you can pass Mr. Augustine's resolution, and at the end of this meeting, I will inform the general manager and the board that we intend to exercise our jurisdictional veto at the board meeting. And then we go back to 3 o'clock immediately. And it's not a threat, Mr. Goldman. It is the position of the District of Columbia. And so I just want to make that statement. Everybody needs to know where we are. We believe we've compromised enormously. So for someone to say that we need to compromise more is not a realistic approach to this problem. Item 4 is up there, Proposal 4, because we need to stay open until 3 o'clock in the morning in the District of Columbia, okay? I put it up there. It wasn't even up there in the original three proposals. All right? Didn't pass. Came in second. The item that's not up there that would have won overwhelmingly is no option. We didn't have that because we need to have the hours Mr. Wiederfeld is asking for, and we need to give them the 8 hours, even though I happen to agree with Mr. Augustine. So we are not going to compromise further. So the board can do what it wants to do. I've made my position clear on behalf of the District of Columbia, not Jack Evans, on behalf of the District of Columbia. That's our position.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. I think there are strong feelings, and that's the time that we've committed to this about what we're trying to do. And the challenge that I have with this is that I think the message to our public has to be clear as well. I think, and Mr. Lovey noted it quite well, we're relying upon the general manager to provide us the direction in order to provide the best possible service in this region and a safe service. We have the FTA and the NTSB saying to us that we are required to correct these problems or else we're going to lose funding and be held in noncompliance. I don't know how the board can exercise its role of oversight. As you said, others are looking at us to do when I can remember the conversation quite clearly of how we got to 3 o'clock. And it was with the same guidance. And I guess my challenge is, if I'm asking someone to run the system, are we to decide in our individual chambers what we would want without using the quality of the talent that he brings to us and his staff to do so? So I'm challenged by how we are asked to do this. I think we could very easily say, let's look at it again at 3, at 18. Or we could say, again, let's go to 4. And all of that, to me, in my interpretation of those statements, says there is not, according to the report that this board and this committee has received, that it's adequate time to get the system back to where it can perform at the level you desire. And that's the challenge. We could all vote for it, and we could ask the general manager to implement it. But the question is, what is it that we should be doing? And it isn't just about the economic driving. I believe the economic driving is important. But this is about watching people die. It's about reliability continuing to decline. And I don't know how we can ask the general manager to find another reason or another method to get us back to that. I really don't. I don't want to say no to the District of Columbia. I surely don't, but I don't understand how we get back.
Okay, and if I can respond to that, Ms. Hudgens, we are not saying, we are giving the general manager everything he is asking for. We're giving him his 8 hours. We're giving him his hours that he's choosing. All we are saying is at the end of a year, we're asking the general manager to prove to us that he needs that second year, because this has an enormous impact on us. So the general manager is getting everything that he wants except a guaranteed second year.
I hear a contradiction in what I thought your ask was here, because we offered the 18 and to come back to it. If we come back to the 18 and say, ask the general manager to assess it and give us a recommendation, that's the question, because you said we go back to it. That, I think we have a challenge in the language there.
No, the challenge is not in the language. On June 30th of 2018, it sunsets. The board will have an opportunity before June 30th, 2018, to assess all of the information the general manager has given us, and if we determine he needs an extra year, we can give him the extra year. That's all we're asking. But the district wants to be in the driver's seat to make that decision, because it clearly affects us a lot more than it affects anybody else. And so we want to be able to analyze the information. We want to be able to make a reasoned determination that the general manager needs this second year, and not just go along with the recommendation because he makes it.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, none of us, maybe you were on the board, maybe the chairman was on the board when we got the 3 a.m. in. I wasn't aware. You know, wasn't in the discussions, don't know how they went. And so as the chair pointed out, and I've said repeatedly, we need a tripwire on this, because maybe you were on the board, maybe Jack was in. Wendy, you were on the board when we got to 3 a.m. Okay, none of us were. So if the board continues to turn over, a year will go by, and half of us will be gone. And nobody will remember to bring it up again.
I think that's the reason that we've been there.
What I think, I just want to back up and say this, that, as I said before, just circling back, I support the team in their effort to improve, obviously, the safety and reliability, to move to a preventive maintenance program. You've heard how I felt about the hours. I want to support this. I want to support them going forward. And what I'm trying to do, and the first step for us as a committee, what I don't want to see happen is that it dies here, okay? The first step that I think has to happen, even for it to get to Chairman Evans in the position that he would have, the first step is, and then it could be amended. We know that that is the case. It can be amended at the board level. We know that, right? The first step is it has to get out of this committee. And I believe that it gets out of this committee with this two-year provision. So I'm hopeful that my colleagues will support that so that we can then get this out of committee and to get to a discussion at the board level.
I'd like to make one last comment, if I may, Madam Chair. Okay, thank you. And this goes to the role of the board, okay? Ms. Hudgens, you've been on the board since 2004. I was on back in the 90s. I don't know what happened between 2010 and today, but I do know in researching my history, the board pretty much went along with the general manager's recommendations. If anybody I asked was on the board during that time, I'd say, how did you not know what the hell was going on here? And it was always, we relied on the general manager, okay? I have ultimate confidence in Paul Wiederfeld, okay? But as a board member, I am not in any way, shape, or form going to give him my responsibility. So when Paul comes back at the end of the year and says, I need this extra year, I am going to not just say, I'm going to give it to you because you're asking for it. I'm going to give it to you because we have done all the analysis we need, and we believe that the recommendation is correct. That is a board's responsibility. It is not to just agree with the general manager's recommendations, because clearly that was done from 2010 to 2015, and this place went to wreck and ruin. Okay? So that's where I'm coming from personally on this. That's why I think at the end of a year, it is critical that this board analyze the information the general manager gives us and then makes that determination. There are members of the board from the district who do not think he needs these hours at all. Okay? You've heard those opinions expressed. I have prevailed upon everyone in the district to give Paul his 8 hours. That's the best compromise I can come up with, and I would hope that everyone hearing what I'm saying will agree with us, or at least give us our due.
Call the question.
Well, we have another proposal, on the table, and I'd like to get a reaction from Mr. Wiedefeld, Mr. Leader, whether this checks the box of what you need to move forward.
In terms of a in effect, a sunset is the one issue, because right now it doesn't even call for a sunset. But I do understand the position of the district and the need to basically take a hard look at this and to force us to do that.
And it is 1 year, 1 year with the sunset, correct?
No.
2 years with a sunset.
2 years.
Is what's on the table.
Yeah, and obviously.
Let's let the general manager.
So what's on the table? My understanding is a 2 year sunset, and so I could live with that 2 year sunset.
Okay. May I ask you another question? We would begin this on July 2017, and so that would give you. The entire remainder of the service period for 17 and then the next year. And that would be what you would be analyzing.
Yes. Were we doing it quarterly?
Right. I think that's we would be doing quarterly. Right. But if we were doing 18, what would be the time frame? If we sunset on 2018, we would be doing a shorter time frame of the analysis.
Yes. Yeah. Just by definition.
And Mr. I think we do need to call a question on this. But Mr. Evans, the reason I tried to walk through this is to think about that time. I think your question and your statement is very true, and that's why we put in the metrics. That's why we put in the others to make sure that we don't find ourselves without the information that we need to make a decision as a board. And so the question is, if you go 18, you have truly just a year and a half of data. And we've gone years to dig ourselves in this hole. I assume that means that you come back, you go to your council, you present our data, and you come back with the confidence that we all would have as that. So that's the challenge that's here. And I don't want to build a solution that is going to be a failure for us. It really needs to keep going forward. Okay. Those are my comments.
Madam Chair, I just clarified one point there. You said 18 months. The preventive maintenance program really does not kick in until July.
That's what I read.
Okay. I thought I heard you just said we'll have 18 months of data. We won't.
You would only have the first half, not the 18 months. 12 months. We'd be back at that budget cycle. 12 months. Thank you for the correction. Okay. A call for the question. All those in favor? Okay. I'm going to go back. I only heard one person, one eye. Okay. All those opposed? Opposed. Okay. We voted on the 19.
Two year
on the sunset piece. Yeah. So it goes back to the original resolution. Okay. Now we can roll up and say we have all of the other items that are cleared. And
Madam Chair, I just wanted to just say that I understand the position that you all have. But you also should understand what you've just done, because what you're doing in not compromising at all is potentially having this system revert back to three
We have another.
No, you don't. You do not. You don't have another chance, and you do not have another vote. You just don't. And perhaps that's what you want. You want them to get nothing. I have come around. I didn't want to do it, but I said I would do the eight. And as I said with the chair, correct. I didn't want that. I said it, but I made my arguments and it failed. That's fine. I'm okay with that. But on this one, we need to at least have a chance for success for them. You all are not setting up a chance for success because it at least needs to leave our committee and get to the board for some level of discussion. And with what you have done now, it's not going to get out of the committee.
Well, I would like to have that to have that discussion. And I think we worked hard at that. And I think that's why I've taken all of the time to concentrate on this particular issue. So I don't know where you want to be other than to provide at least a sunset. And you wanted the 19. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Mr.
And I have heard loud, and what I'm trying to say is this. Mm-hmm. The district has been obviously very clear in that they are requiring some form of a sunset. Now, I heard what he said loud and clear. He's like he said, it's 1 year. But what I'm saying to you is that if we don't have anything, we don't even get a chance to have a discussion around that. And that is what my great concern is right now, is they have made a compromise. Right? This is a compromise situation. But what I just cannot possibly comprehend that there won't be, I can't imagine there won't be a complete a veto if we don't come out of here without any form of a sunset. That's all that I'm trying to say to you. So that's what you are doing. You are, in essence, you're preventing this program, these hours of service, from leaving this committee. They're not going to leave this committee today.
To get to the board.
Okay. Well, if that's where, and you've been clear, because that tells us where you will go next. And I will move that we will bring to the board Mr. Evans' position, and allow us to try and get there. I really hope that we were all in a different position, but if that's the only thing, this is the committee that's going to get there. And if you're going to take all of the
Madam
work
Chair,
that we've done
way.
Out of it.
It's the only way.
You know, I understand. You've heard what my position has been up to now, and I'm really trying to be a listener and try and get us to the board and help where we are trying to go with this. So,
Madam Chair, that is why I suggested that the two to get to the board. That's why I suggested the two to get to the board.
Well,
the district is one.
I understand, and I counted them all. Okay. I really have.
But whatever goes to the board will have a chance to discuss it, whether
well,
it's a...
But Mr. Lauby, your votes are not allowing it to get to the board. We have to get it to the board. The board can change this. They can change the work that we do. They have the ability to amend it. But it has to leave our committee. And right now, it's not going to leave.
Mr. Augustine, I could say your vote's not allowing us to get to the board, too. I mean,
I agree. But what I'm trying to say to you is that I did make a compromise.
I think we're going to find a compromise out of here because I think we really are stuck. And I think that doesn't help the general manager either. And so, Mr. Lauby, I'm going to offer an amendment that we go back to the sunset of 2018. I do that as sacrifice of 2018 because we will have some service. And the question that if you can't accept all the compromises that have been before, I guess that's what we are at. So it's both. That's how we got here. There's a second,
yes,
from you. We'll see where you go. All those in favor of the amendment to go to the sunset on the resolution statement of 20.
The sunset has to come from somebody who, or the second.
Oh,
has to
the
come
second
from
vote voted
to reconsider.
Reconsider.
It has to
okay.
come from.
Okay,
Bob.
Bob
would have to reconsider.
I,
Who was on the winning side?
I was on the.
Oh, us two.
Oh, second. And that second, it has to be.
So, explain what we're doing now.
We're going back to the 2018, and you were on the
to move it out.
Willing side, so we need to move it
although
out.
Although I would suggest that the 2019 gives the 2 years, but she's saying 2018.
Because we don't need to go back and have this discussion
some
more. Yes.
Well, I would propose that we reconsider 2019 then to get it up to the board.
We already had the motion on the floor for 2018.
Yeah,
it's not seconded, though.
Yeah, it's not.
So is there a second for my motion?
No, it's no. Not a second for my motion. That's why we're here. So.
All right. I make a motion if the only way we have forward is to do a sunset on 2019. I move that we do a sunset on 2019.
It has to be me. I second the motion. I'll go with you.
I'll call the question.
Yeah, I agree. We're there. All those in favor of the motion, the
aye.
Motion includes all of that.
Aye.
And those opposed?
Okay.
Well, the agenda item for...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
We now have to vote on the whole thing.
The agenda item that is to be considered, and that's where we are. Is the
Madam Chair, I have
those in favor of
I'm sorry, I wanted to ask some questions on the bus plan.
Just,
is that appropriate at this point?
Just, the item needs to be approved with all of the changes, and so the motion on the table for the item for approval, is there a motion? All those in favor of the motion as approved?
Modified.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Is there an aye on it?
Opposed.
Okay. And we still have
notice of the jurisdiction.
And we've done all that work. We still have you on the other side. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
That was the full resolution that we just...
That was the full resolution.
Okay, including the amendments that we talked about, right? Okay. So I just wanted to make sure.
That should be all of the amendments.
All right.
Okay. And the last part of that resolution. We approved a full resolution there. Okay. I'm going to assume that we will not be addressing the... Are there any of these that we must address in the next, say, in a short time? After the information items. I know we have. Are there any items in the information that are critical to the board? Is it the consensus that we move the items that are information to another customer service?
So moved.
So moved, so that we amend the agenda and come back with that. So with that approval of the resolution, then we are adjourned.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask some questions on the Lifeline bus plan. Because I thought you hadn't approved the whole resolution.
Yeah, we did.
Okay. My questions don't go to whether the bus plan should be approved. I'd really just have some questions about it that I would like to ask of staff, and it could be considered when we get to the board level, and if I want to make a motion at that point. So the context for these questions is your survey findings slide, which shows that 85% of...
I just need to ask a question. Have they started the other meeting, or are they holding?
So the audits is already at the administration's meeting.
Is it here? Okay, I apologize. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to make sure.
Okay. Yes. So your survey found that 85% of Metrobus people would not use Metrobus as an alternative to Metrorail with the shorter hours in effect. And in fact, 33% said they would never consider a Metrobus as an alternative. My question is, in the survey, do you have any information, since this program has been in effect now since June, do we have any information on how people are getting home? Since they obviously aren't going on Metrorail.
Yes, so from this survey finding, we have people indicating that they would use alternative modes, including the ones that are demonstrated here in this slide, Uber, Lyft, walking, et cetera. But again, 80% of, if I'm talking about the late night hours, 80% of those trips are discretionary, not work trips. So they have indicated that there's some flexibility in terms of what hours they travel, so they just change their travel times as well as mode. Okay.
But some for the 20% that are not discretionary, do we know how those people are getting home?
So some are shifting to bus. And what we are saying is that some of this Lifeline service is because we are seeing some crowding on some of the higher corridor bus routes. And we are seeing some shift to bus. And that's where we're trying to look at some mitigations.
All right. So if I look at your Lifeline bus thing, and that's one of the attachments, I don't know if it's after that's a good one to keep on. You say that, let's just say, Connecticut Avenue, Mount Pleasant. It says now the existing service is 35-minute frequency. And then the Lifeline, you have 20-30. So what does that mean? What is the nature of Lifeline service that is
20
an improvement?
I believe that's a reference to 20 to 30-minute headways to be determined by.
So instead of every 35 minutes, it could be the improvement is just every 25 or 30 minutes.
Right.
Is
so
that how to read that?
In other words, the proposal altogether is to add 40 buses and slightly fewer operators. So in that particular route, for example, you might have more buses added, so you would increase the frequency of headways and therefore reduce crowding and be able to accommodate more ridership.
Okay. Now, let's just take this spider web here. If I've got a resident of Montgomery County, and he's at Gallery Place, and he wants to get to Rockville at 2 a.m. in the morning, how does this help him, this Lifeline service? How does he go?
Well,
since there's no Metro Rail.
About the current route structure actually supports roughly 75 to 80% of the ridership that's going to need to get to Rockville at night. So there are existing route structure, bus routes in the structure in the current system that he could avail himself of. The Lifeline service is providing connections where none exist today. Rockville happens to be one where I believe, Mr. Hambry is here, he can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the existing regular route system would accommodate that customer.
I hear you. I must say that for something that will cost, what's your estimate, $2 million? This seems like a waste of money, not the most efficient way to get, people home, since obviously they're getting home now, and they've been doing that through June. And this program is not going to start till July 1st of next year at the earliest. So people are going to be going a year without this Lifeline service. And I just think, as I've said a couple months ago, you'd be much better off exploring with Uber and Lyft how to get people home in ways that apparently they prefer, rather than introducing a few buses here and there at an amount of money, which I think could be better spent in the FY18 budget. So I will leave you with that comment. I may be coming back with some amendment on the Lifeline service at the board level. Thank you.